Well, we're really going to have to convince everybody in the room that you really can't get rowdy because we got pretty rowdy. So I think we're testing it out. Is that real? Yes, it is. We're going to be still here in just a moment, and you're going to see how close it comes. And so I hope you guys at home did similar, just went and did some stuff so you can let go of it. We hold on to it thinking that's what it is, but you don't have to hold on to it like that. You have access to it. It's just part of being human. And so we have to normalize it a little bit. This afternoon, we're going to talk about the mind, this seclusion from the mind. And I want to begin by noting that the mind is not the enemy. And I know sometimes in this practice, it comes across like the mind is the enemy. Like somehow or another, if I can't get this mind under control, then I'm a failure in this practice. And it's really outside of the Buddhist teachings. That notion is outside of the Buddhist teaching. And the best way for me to think of it is to imagine that the Buddha has ADD, that he has ADHD, just like me, right? So his mind is all over the place. And if I could think of that and actually accept that he didn't have this still beautiful mind, but he had a crazy mind that was all over the place, then all of his teachings make sense. Because that man has described the five hindrances in so many different ways, and every single one of them makes sense. So he described the hindrances as like if you had a bowl of water and clear water, you can see your reflection and know who you are. That's normal. That's awareness mind. But sometimes that water is clouded over with, like colored dyes, and you can't see your reflection because all you can see is a colored dyes. That's desire. Or sometimes it's boiling and you can't see your reflection because the water's too hot and boiling. That's anger. Isn't that what anger feels like? Like boiling, and then sometimes it's muddy. It's you can't see your reflection because it's like stirred up muddy. That is doubt. And sometimes it's got algae grown all over it. And you can't see your reflection because of the algae. And algae does have a sloth and torpor kind of energy to it. It does seem like it's all slushy and it's different than mud. And then if it's whipped up, like stirred up, that's restlessness. It's absolutely what hindrances feel like. But that's not the only way he described it. He described the hindrances as like the difference between gold. When gold has gotten the impurities out of it, it's pliable, malleable, it shines. But when it has a lot of impurities in it, which is what the hindrances are, it's brittle, it's hard, it's difficult to work with. And so this is the clearing away of the impurities of gold. I mean, he described the hindrances as imagining that you have this a river flowing from the mountain straight down to the ocean, a rushing river that's solid at its core, and it just moves along at a quick pace straight away, taking everything with it. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Niagara Falls. I went one time and I saw the river that runs to Niagara Falls. That is the river he's talking about. Man, that river is moving. You can try to get in the middle of that river, but you ain't standing up. He's taking you and everything else. Everything's going down to the falls and over. And that's the way it moves like that. And then I imagined what the Buddha said the hindrances do. He said that it's like taking, if somebody had a capacity to open up the channels on the sides, it would disperse all that water out from the core, and your center would not have any strength to it anymore. It just gets dispersed outward as soon as you open up these channels. But if you close the channels, the river at its center can run smooth again. So he described the hindrances as being these channels that get opened up and knock us off our center, just disperses us from our center. So all that cultivation that we may have had in the physical viveka, the physical seclusion, if you don't pay attention to the mental will disperse all your energy from the center outward. And so this mental seclusion becomes important. He said that the hindrances themselves, they overwhelm your awareness. So they are overwhelming your wisdom mind, that mind that can just know what's happening and has the ability to be with whatever's happening and be okay with it. It gets overwhelmed by this loud, obnoxious, kind of reactive, impulsive mind. And so it weakens your discernment. And instead of you being able to discern what's really going on here, you get trapped in what would otherwise be just the mind's reactivity. It's why we have this notion of overreacting, because in retrospect, you're like, wow, I really lost it there. I could have just took a breath and been a little different. But that overreactivity comes from this following this impulsive mind. So in order for the Buddha, in my thinking, in order for him to talk about the hindrances with that degree of particularity, can you see that he had to experience it? He had to overcome a mind that was aversive, a mind that was wanting something else, a mind that was sleepy and restless and full of doubt. He had to overcome it. It's not that we have to wait and hope for our mind to not be that way. The whole point is to be grateful for the mind that is that way, because that is our kind of, it's like weight training. I, some of you know, I used to do this heavy, I used to lift heavy weights very slowly. And every time I went into that gym, you know, the guy that's the trainer, he's all muscular and he likes to lift weights slowly. And I would always say, it's too heavy. I just wanted him to give me the easy weight, the easy weight. It's too heavy. That's what I would tell him. He'd say, Tori, there's no such thing as too heavy. I'm like, but it is too heavy. It's too heavy for me to pick up. He said, why do you think you have to pick it up? And I'm thinking, we're lifting weights. And when I think lifting weights, I think picking up. That's not your thinking? He said, if I told you to knock down or push down this wall, what would you think? And I would say, I can't push down the wall. He goes, yeah, but if I said try, what would you do? I said, I would go over and I would push on the wall. He goes, and that's it, right? Would you feel bad if you can't push the wall down? I'm like, no. He goes, well, why do you feel bad if you can't lift the weights? You don't have to lift them. You just have to get the muscles tightened that need to lift it. That's good enough. I couldn't quite understand that, right? So you're really just tightening the muscles. And that tightening of the muscles was good enough. And so this kind of process with the mind is not about getting rid of your mind. You don't have to get rid of your mind. You don't have to hate your mind. You don't have, some people have good minds and some people have bad minds. That's what I thought for so long, because this practice is taught by people who don't have ADD, clearly. Because you can tell when I talk about it, it sounds very different. But I kept trying to get what I thought was the kind of mind that I needed in order to do what teachers were saying. And when I gave that up, like stop trying to lift heavy weights and just accept that this is the mind I have, that's it, this is what we're working with, I was stunned that my mind is as great a mind as somebody who does not have ADHD. My mind can get as still and as pristine as someone's mind who does not have ADHD. I can get as quiet. The mind can stop thinking. All of those things were possible when I stopped trying to make my mind be what I thought it should be, and just worked with the mind I actually have. That's what you have to do. You have to work with the mind you actually have. So one way that the Buddha articulated the mind, which we don't really talk about, is in the third foundation. In the third foundation, he said you could establish mindfulness. So just like we established mindfulness with the breath or sounds or the body posture, that's body, first foundation. But you could establish mindfulness with the third foundation by just noticing what is affecting the mind. That's it. You don't have to do anything about it. You don't have to say, oh my God, I have aversion affecting the mind. I need to get rid of the aversion. You do not have to get rid of the aversion. And you know why you don't have to get rid of the aversion? Because it leaves. Everything that arises passes away on its own. You don't have to do anything about it. What we end up doing is the aversion arises, and then we get caught in the aversion and start spinning around in what we're averse to. And as we start spinning around in what we're averse to, that aversion becomes a hindrance. It obscures, weakens, it's like opening the channels and takes away our center core because we get caught in the aversion. So what the Buddha was saying was that if you are sitting here and the mind is thinking, then note what is it thinking and how does that thinking affect you? The mind is lost in planning. Okay, you're not lost in planning. The mind is lost in planning. Now you could go up in the planning with it, but your body is still just sitting here. You're up in the planning doing all these things, but that's not reality. So if you stay in reality, which is I'm sitting here realizing the mind is planning, how is it affecting the mind and body? What's happening? And as you sit there and begin to notice how the mind is being affected by this planning, tightening, the tension, the spinning, and whatever it feels like when you're lost in some planning, you actually are becoming secluded from the planning itself. It's kind of a strange phenomena, but you are secluded from the hindrance of wanting and, you know, whatever your aversion. So you could be planning to fix some problem, and you're becoming secluded from the hindrance by not joining the planning, but instead sitting here noticing mind is planning. It's affected by planning. How's it affected? Is there tension somewhere? What's happening here? How's my breathing? I mean, you're just beginning to be present to what's actually happening. And by doing that, you're not obscured by the planning itself, because the planning is relevant. It's not really happening. You're planning, but none of your planning is actually happening, because at some point when the sit's over, you'll forget all of that. You'll do your walking, think a little bit, but okay, you can get your feet, you can feel your feet and walking. You come back and sit back down, and the mind will come up with a completely different plan all over again. It'll come scratch all that. We're coming at it from a different angle, and we're doing something else. The planning is not real. The planning is to avoid the present moment. So the planning is like opening the channels, or it's film over the water. It stirs up the water, but it's just trying to get away from whatever's happening in the present moment. And it's mostly because the mind doesn't think there's enough stimulus. That's usually why all that thinking starts happening. It thinks it's not interesting anymore. So whatever we did this morning, that was interesting. That was new to the mind. And now that you've already experienced that, the mind thinks, oh, I know how to do that. I can do that. That's nothing. So this afternoon, what you'll find is more thinking, less noticing, more thinking. So to be in this kind of seclusion, you want to get secluded from the mind. And you're not secluded from the mind. I have to use English words, but you have to be careful. Not secluded from the mind, as in, I don't want the mind to be there. Secluded from getting caught up in what the mind is doing. That's what you're secluded from. You can let the mind do whatever it's doing, but your body is still sitting here. So somebody brought up this distinction between two different processes. So this morning, we were working on samadhi. Samadhi is this kind of stilling and unifying the mind. It's collecting the mind together and unifying it. You know, having a sense of being collected and present here. But there is another aspect of mind that's equally important in Dhamma practice, in wisdom in general. And it is inquiry or investigation. And, you know, I got to qualify it, because English words, that investigation sounds like you should figure it out. I got to understand what's going on here. I got to figure it out. But that is not what investigation is. You are sensing into, you are reflecting, probing from this reflective kind of sensing into what you're feeling. So when you're talking about an active mind, sometimes samadhi is available to you, where you could just settle the mind down, collect it, and unify it. And sometimes the mind is so engaging that you can try to settle down and it won't settle. It just is talking and it won't stop. You don't have to use the samadhi in that case. You can use this inquiry. So you could actually sit and reflect on how the mind is impacting you. So you know you're sitting, but how is it impacting me? What is this thinking actually doing to the body? How do I feel in this? Where do I feel these thoughts? Is it in my back? Is it in my knee? Might seem weird, but a lot of our thoughts are actually located in various parts of the body. And when that part of the body gets activated, those thoughts come up. So it's like this investigative or inquiry, you're just letting the wisdom mind be. Just letting the wisdom mind be aware of what's happening. And then with the accepting this kind of unification or samadhi, you're actually allowing that present moment to be. So in the samadhi, we were right there in the present moment. Here, now that your mind's been stirred up, you're going to have digestion, you're going to have all kinds of things that's going to trigger the mind. And so you want to let the wisdom mind just reflect on what this mind is doing. It's actually it's actually very, both of these are very important. Neither one of them is better than the other. Both of them you do with the body. One, you're feeling the sensory experience of thinking, and one, you're experiencing the sensory experience of the present moment. And both are in the present moment, but one is more to help you stay present with the thinking, so that you don't go wandering off with it. Neither one of them are about the mind, which is kind of strange because they both involve the mind, but they're not about the mind. They're about your present moment experience, both of them. But you need the probing to help you stay in the present moment and not get caught in the thinking, because our thinking is a process. So last piece, and then we're gonna practice a little bit with it. Thinking is a process, like listening to or looking at. It's what we do with our sensory experience. We all know how to eat broccoli, you know. I know what I'm eating. So all of our sensory experience, smelling, is a smelling something, tasting something, eating something, listening to something, looking at something. Those are all conceptualized experiences. And that's what we are used to doing. But in this practice of Dhamma, in order to awaken the mind, we are awakening outside of the conceptual world we live in, so that we are just in experience and not our thoughts about experience. So likewise, thinking is a conceptualization of something. But thoughts And emotions are just like sensations in the body. They just come and go. They're not very, thoughts are subtle and quick. You can, you know this, but I'm just going to remind you. You can have a little song in your mind that's only about three little notes. Bloop, bloop, bloop. But you hear the entire song and you have this entire emotional relationship with it. And all you keep hearing is just three little bloop, bloop, bloop. And there's a whole world in that. That's what the process of thinking is. But if you begin to notice just the thought itself, you can notice that those three little notes are affecting you way more. There's something else going on here than just those three little notes. It's the same way with a thought. Most of what happens is just some thought comes up and it affects us way more than we are acknowledging. And so the more that you begin to notice thoughts as individual thoughts, just like sound that's just sound, and I'm hearing, not listening to, I'm seeing, not looking at, I'm just seeing the process, this kind of the eyes doing what eyes do, the ears doing what ears do. Never do we say, oh, I wish the ears would stop hearing. We're always like, oh, it was so beautiful, the birds and the little leaves, and it's so beautiful. But then when we start talking about the mind, we're like, ah, never shuts up. It's always talking. Sort of like, but actually, to the mind, to the awareness, it's just little thoughts. It's just like, there's no difference between the mind's thoughts and a bird song. It doesn't make that distinction. We are making the distinction as if somehow or another, the process of mind thinking is somehow not as good as ears hearing. So the reason why I want to be clear about this is because the Buddha did not make a distinction that we are making. He included mind as a sense door, just like ears, just like eyes, just like our taste buds, tongue, body, the touch. He included all of it as a sense door. So your mind is a sense door. It's just data coming in. And if you make this distinction, then you set this process where you can't, you make heaven and hell. Thinking mind is hell, not thinking mind is heaven. And you can't force the mind to stop thinking. And then you get caught in a loop of wanting it to be other than what it is. So instead, you want to cultivate a kind of seclusion from this thinking process itself. We get secluded, just like we were physically secluded in the present moment. We're going to be secluded. And so this afternoon, we're actually going to notice the thinking and not get intimidated by it, but instead just remind yourself where you are, present moment, steady here. We'll have our anchor so we can steady ourselves and see if we can just notice how the mind is being affected by whatever that thinking is and get interested in it. What's the worst that can happen? You could spend the whole afternoon thinking, which is what we do all the time anyway. But at least this time, we might see something. We might notice something about thinking. All right, so we're going to take a break here for 10 minutes and come back at 20 minutes to, and we'll start our round our series of practice.